to the Daily Gold Podcast. Covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roybern.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Daily Gold Podcast. Well, on the day we are chatting, it is Wednesday, March 27th, and with me is Greg Weldon, one of my favorite guests, and one of your favorite guests. As I always say, when it comes to gold and macro, nobody does it better, or nobody knows more than Greg Weldon. So on this day, you know, we got the new contract, gold closed at a new all-time high. But you know, Greg, before we get into the markets, I'm really curious about your view on the economy. I mean, if you talk to 10 people on the economy, you get 9 or 10 different answers. So it seems like nobody really knows what's going on. I'll give you the floor. I mean, take as much time as you need. I mean, just give us your view on the economy, what's happening, and maybe where things could be going when we're at the end of the year.
Sure. And I think you kind of nailed it on the head in the question, because you get 9 different opinions because everything's so polarized, Jordan, as we know. You know, but when you apply it to the macro data, it's equally polarized in that there's something for everyone. There's ammunition for almost any argument you want to make right now. So it's kind of interesting to see where the narrative goes, because it goes to what's in the vested interest of the most people, right? So that's a higher stock market, essentially. When you look at really breaking it down and then really mushrooming it, because when you start at the top, I think something really important happened last week. And a few people, I've heard a couple people mention like it was a significant, you know, day for the Fed, which it was. But it's so much bigger than that, Jordan. I wrote a piece just now calling it, or actually late last week, and I'm doing a new special now on the gold mining shares, which are finally, you know, about to explode too. But called it MoneyFest 2024, all right? I'm a big music guy. The Ultra EDM Festival was here this weekend. It's always one of my favorite weekends of the year. And, you know, Zedd is one of my favorite performers. I've been backstage with Zedd and stuff. And I'll tell you what, his song Clarity is a classic. And you can apply the lyrics of Clarity to the global macroeconomic scene right now. And I think you got clarity from central banks last week at MoneyFest 2024. What do I mean by that? 22 central banks met last week on policy. 8 of them, almost 40%, 36%, cut interest rates. that's eight central banks cut interest rates last week. 10 left rates unchanged, and 6 of those telegraphed rate cuts by the end of this year. And 4 central banks raised rates, including, you know, these are central banks where the currencies have gotten smashed, where gold is actually performing the best, is the places that just hike rates to try and rein inflation in, 2 of them in particular, Angola and Turkey, that I talk about all the time. All right. You can talk about Angola and Nigeria just as having a currency issue too. Gold making new highs, you know, in all those currencies. But what's interesting in that is to take it back to the dollar. So the dollar's been firm, but the dollar index is not really rallying here either. All right. So you break it down to a bunch of different things. What's the narrative for the Fed? Well, in this context of money, you know, Fest 2024, well, you say the Fed left policy unchanged last week, but they really didn't. If you look at what they said, they are easing, and I'm using that word, QT, all right? They have having a discussion as to how much to implement this, and while they said this is not going to change the end shrinkage of the balance sheet over time, they are now lengthening that time frame and shortening the amount of bonds they're letting roll off on a week-to-week, month-to-month basis. This is significant because you ask why, all right? Well, we just got the latest budget numbers from the U.S. in February. What you saw was spending, Jordan, was more than twice revenue for the month. How insane is that? They spent more than twice as much as they took in, number one. Number two, how are they financing this? Means of financing, borrowing from the public. It's public debt that we're borrowing from the public. You start to look at the dollar in a new light when you start to take in these facts. Not only that, $1.1 trillion public borrowing in the first 5 months of the fiscal year through the end of February. Last year was $270 billion, 3.5 times as much. And the target for the entire year, what's budgeted, is 1.6. You're almost there already. You're more than 2/3 of the way there. Why does this matter? It matters because what the Fed just did has everything to do with this. They don't want to clog the bond market up. They don't want to see the bond market run into difficulty here because supply is about to explode. It already is. The number one thing that increased on a year-over-year basis in the deficit was interest payments. I mean, $127 billion increase. All right. So they have an issue here with the bond market, and they just addressed it. And they addressed it well before, you know, inflation is back to target rate. It's not even close. All right. So what really happened last week? It's pretty simple. We got clarity in one thing. The Fed just flinched, and they're willing, they showed a willingness here to acquiesce to higher general rates of inflation. You haven't seen this rush into the dollar on this interest rate dynamic because all these other interest rates are coming down. And you ask yourself why? The dollar is now exposed as the emperor with no clothes. And so this is where gold picks up, where it's rallying in all currencies on the face of the planet. And the next thing, of course, is now to see the mining shares join the party.
Right. Now, that's a great transition. But I do want to ask a couple economic follow-ups before we get into that. And I guess
we got to talk. And we got to talk labor market. We got to talk labor market for sure. But go ahead.
So yeah, two follow-ups. I mean, I'll only ask you one at a time. just so on the economy, do you think the Fed sees the economy as they look out 6 or 9 months? They see real threat that, you know, the labor market's going to get worse. The economy's weakening. Is that why they flinched potentially?
I think the bond market is the number one reason, but yes, and the labor market, and the Fed is smart enough to see through the headlines, to see through the pop media and the talking heads that are celebrating the big payroll employment gains, celebrating the big hourly wage gains. All right, we can smash all of that in about 5 seconds, honestly. Take the household survey. All right, the number of jobs has fallen for 2 months in a row. The number of unemployed rose by a huge amount in the most recent month. And you have people dropping out of the labor force again. We haven't seen that for months. You've had this flow, people back in, and they find jobs. That's over. And not only that, when you look at the household survey, over the last 12 months, the number of unemployed is up over 500,000 people. When you look at the U6 total unemployment rate, it's up 50 basis points to 7.3. All right? And then you start to talk about, well, what are the jobs being created? They're part-time jobs. The number of people working part-time for economic reasons is up. The growth in part-time jobs is the biggest percentage of the growth. And in fact, it's all the growth because full-time jobs in the last 12 months are down. All right. So this is a problem in terms of labor. And then we take it to the wage gains. And 2 months ago, you had a big hourly earnings gain. And they celebrating like it was, you know, New Year's Eve and everything. And you had a 4.5% year-over-year gain in average hourly earnings. And people are saying, well, now you're well above inflation. You got some juice for the consumer. Couldn't be further from the truth. What people failed to dig deep enough to see was hours worked fell in almost every industry that month, 2 months ago. And the average weekly earnings deflated for the month and is only 2.9 year over year equal to core inflation. So you have no earnings growth, number one. You have a labor market that's cracking right before our eyes, all right? And the Fed actually said in Powell's comments and in the statement, they said a weaker than expected labor market would cause us to act. That was a big statement. You've reached the point now where they are aware that the labor market is weakening. 6 months ago, labor market's robust, labor market's, you know, really firm, and that's a reason for us to stay higher longer. No longer the case. So I think that was a big thing. And when you talk about the consumer, I mean, you know, average weekly take-home pay is basically the same as inflation, so there's no wage gains. Savings have been depleted to levels well below 2019 pre-pandemic. And you have credit card debt the highest ever. At the same time, the senior loan officers at banks have said, we're going to be tightening standards on credit cards and auto loans for the rest of the year. So where's this growth come from? Not only do you need growth that's equal to or higher than inflation, you need above-trend growth because you have above-trend debt creation over the last couple of years. If you don't have that growth, you can't service that debt. You got to collapse. And the Fed is, I think, now starting to maybe have the risk of more balanced. That doesn't mean the risk of inflation has gone away. In fact, inflation is probably going to rise. We could talk about that for an hour. All right. So inflation is going to rise again. What are they going to do after unemployment starts to rise in an election year? And here's a great stat for you. The unemployment rate among teenagers has risen in the last 3 months from 10% to 12.5%. Take the summer coming up. Take these sanctuary cities where all these immigrants are living outdoors. No air conditioning. You get this teenage unemployment dynamic. You have an election year that's the most divided political situation the U.S. has ever seen. This is a recipe for social unrest if ever I've seen one. And that's a major risk that plays into gold. The Middle East is a major risk that plays into gold. China is a major risk that plays into gold. And right now, so all of that is negative economically. And what I see really, Jordan, is stagflation more than anything everywhere.
Yeah. So my other follow-up, I mean, I don't want to mince words, Greg, but when is the Fed going to yield curve control?
Yeah, Jordan, you've never minced words, so please don't start now. So, you know, you're a little older than when I first met you. So mincing words, no, that's out. Okay. So we tell it like it is. That's what we do. That's the service we provide. And you have enough experience now that you've seen a lot of things that we've seen. All right. In terms of yield curve control, man, that's a good question. I can't say that I've contemplated that thought process for the U.S. I would say that's several steps away. So will we get there? Probably, I guess, if you really press me to say that. You know, I view this all as kind of the same thing. I mean, you have the BOJ who just, you know, raised rates for the first time in whatever, 17 years. They've been negative for 7 years, and yet they're still buying JGBs, okay? They're still QE. And I mean, so this is where we go with this no matter what, whether it's yield curve control or whatever this is. And it comes down to monetary Armageddon, and it comes down to officialdom. When staring into a debt deflation abyss, we'll choose to reflate every single time. We made the choice when the road diverged. We chose the reflation road in 1990, the last time we maybe could have managed the situation, you know, organically, so to speak. We're not. So now there's only one choice: keep printing more money. And that comes down to what I wrote in my book in 2006, which was, again, staring into the debt deflation, you will print money every time. And I said they will buy bonds and monetize debt. I don't forget, I was on Squawk Box with Joe Kernan, and I said that. And they called me a nut job on national television. And 18 months later, it happened. All right. So how about monetary Armageddon?
Yeah. Didn't he also call you a nut job in the urinal as well? I don't mean to. We got to add some levity to this situation.
Well, what's funny about it is that he called me a nut job, and I wasn't on the set when this happened. So I do the interview, and it was a book promotion. And I said, you know, the consumer is going to roll over. The real estate market is going to, you know, have a problem here. And the Fed will be forced to buy bonds and monetize debt. And they're looking at me like I have no head, right? So this is late 2006, November 2006. So I heard him say that when I went to the green room to get my stuff to leave the studio, right? And they have a big TV in there. And he's like, these guys about gold, they're all a bunch of nut jobs. This guy with debt monetization, this isn't Japan kind of thing. Well, what's funny about it is I ran into him 12 months later in the men's room. I'm at the urinal. He comes in. Of course, I'm almost 7 feet tall. I weigh 300 pounds. I'm a former professional wrestler looking dude. And I he's right next to me. And I don't use my height to intimidate people ever, because it's not about how tall you are. It's about how big you are inside. But this case, I did. And it's one of these things where I'm kind of just leaning ever so over where he's down. He's like, what the hell's going on here? And, you know, so we finish and we go to wash our hands. And I go, you don't remember me, do you? And I go, no. I go, you call me a nut job on national television. I really didn't like that. I didn't appreciate that. And I'm standing like as close to him as I can. And I swear by the time we left, he was inviting me to go play golf at his country club. I kid you not. So, but the point here is monetary Armageddon. I mean, this is the path to where there's one end game. The Treasury Secretary, the Fed Chair are in the bunker, in the nuclear bunker with the weapons, and they have to turn the key simultaneously and print enough money to buy every dollar of debt ever printed by the Treasury. So, what do you think gold's going to be then? Because that's going to happen some point in time. Now, I don't think I'll necessarily see it, but that's the end game.
So, yeah, just another quick follow-up, because you mentioned yield curve control could be several steps away. So then is QE the next step? Maybe what could be the next step?
They'll go rate cuts first, I think. You know, I mean, it depends where the issue comes. Is economically, then they'll cut rates. If it is something more along the banking system, it'll be QE. And you know, and I know, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of talk all of a sudden about the banking system and the risk. But the fact of the matter is that a $1.7 trillion, a little bit less now, some has already matured. But in the next 17 months, you have almost, you know, over $1.5 trillion of commercial real estate debt that's maturing. 80% of those loans are held by small banks. Worse than that, 36% of all of that is held by banks with less than $10 billion in capitalization in assets. That's a real problem. So I could see easily some point later this year, early 2025, you have an issue with the banks and commercial real estate, and the Fed comes in and prints a bunch of money. I would think that by then, though, they will have cut rates probably already. And we'll see where gold is then. You know, I was originally targeting based on, you know, geometry and math and everything. When it broke, you know, 19, whatever the high was, 1950-ish, it would go to 2650. I've had to upgrade that to 3,000 because, and it's, I like to say this, and you might get a laugh out of it, or you might so cringe when I say this as well. I don't know. But, you know, hey, I'm looking for gold to be the next Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Meaning skyrocket, like going, you know, 8-9% a day. And then you could reach to 3,000. Hey, if Bitcoin could be $70,000, there's no reason gold can't be 3,000. It's undervalued relative to the rest of the commodities complex anyway, especially, you know, things like crude oil and stuff.
Yeah, no, I strongly agree. So yeah, let's get into that. Yeah, we know gold is broken out, doing well. You mentioned your targets. I mean, silver, I know it's going to break $26 eventually, but I mean, it's gotten up there so many times. I mean, is it gold just has to pull it higher? I mean, what are you, I don't know what you've said about silver, but just give me your take on silver and the 26 resistance is pretty significant.
It really is. It's a range. You bought it at 22 and sold it at 26. You're kind of making a fortune, but I've seen that before. It works until you go all in and you bust. So I don't recommend doing that, especially now, because I think the problem with silver has been the dollar. I mean, the dollar hasn't come down. I mean, the fact that gold has rallied in dollar terms is phenomenal and is testament to what I'm talking about with public debt and deficits and everything, when the emperor with no clothes. It's not, that doesn't have the credibility it used to have. And you're seeing it. People are more willing to buy Bitcoin or gold than they are the dollar in times of kind of this little bit of distress. So the fact that gold has rallied when the dollar is held firm only because of the interest rate differentials, by the way, that to me has been great performance. Silver will move, and it's on the verge because I think it is tied in with the mining shares and the juniors, which are now, we can talk about that in a minute because there's a lot to talk about there. I'm actually writing a special on it, as you know, before I came on, and I'll finish it when we get off. It's the dollar, and it's the monetary thing for real, as opposed to we're telegraphing rates or the forward Fed funds is pricing in this much. The forward Fed funds was at 375, pricing at 200 basis points of rate cuts, and silver didn't move. It needs the real deal. And it needs the dollar to show that it is vulnerable. And we still may be a step away from that. I think we're really close. I really do. But, you know, I think that it takes a little bit more dovishness from the Fed to see that play out. And then silver will rock. But, you know, I mean, gosh, all you got to do is look at the SIL, and it's telling you it's just not time.
Yeah, I mean, I should have asked you this question first, but as we're getting into gold. Gold against the stock market, because you look at gold against bonds, you know, bonds, in my opinion, they broke, they're in a secular bear now. Gold has been crushing TLT, but the stock market, it just keeps going up. Gold against the S&P, I mean, I'm not saying it can't turn around, but man, that looks like shit. What? Yeah. I mean, it's a long-term downtrend. Give me your take on gold against the stock market.
I mean, it's at new lows, and it does kind of look like shit, but I'll tell you what, I see a lot of signs, especially from the quantitative side, that suggest that this massive bear market in gold versus the equity market is ending. And that's a big deal because each of these kind of forays above like the 52-week moving average in the gold S&P ratio, right? You've had a couple of them in the last maybe 2 years and they failed really quickly, right? But to me, this time is different because the setup is all different. The timing is different. The dollar is different. The Fed is different. And what you're seeing is the technical action is such that suggests not only a bottom, but you look at it in terms of, you know, people are kind of like, well, why haven't these, you know, stocks moved? All right. They're not going to move when everyone's buying Infotech and the S&P's are record highs and all these things. You need rotation out of those things into the metals to get them juiced. And you're on the verge. You talked about it in the opening. You said it really well, too, that you're on the verge. I think the NASDAQ is overcooked here. It's extended. It is really stretched to the max. You do some of the geometry on this. It's almost unsustainable where it is. I think there's downside risk here. And that plays into gold now, too, as we were talking about. But when you look at gold versus the XLK, which is the information technology ETF, it too is bottoming and has a mini breakout right here today. This stuff is happening. And this is what I'm putting in my special. And the charts are great. You got to take a look at them. Not only that, take it another step further. The GDXJ is making move against the GDX. And more importantly, they are both now breaking out against gold literally today. And this is big. And you see some of the action, even in the underlying ETFs themselves, has been a little more positive in a way, frankly, that it has this kind of impetus that I haven't seen in a while. So I think there's a lot to be said for the tipping point in debt has been reached. The tipping point for the Fed has been reached. The tipping point for the dollar has been reached. And the tipping point for the negativity and frustration with some of these mining shares has been reached. And you can look at gold and look at the open interest. People have kind of, you know, given up to some degree. And I said a couple of weeks ago, and you're seeing it right now, that people will be chasing this market higher, kind of clamoring to get in because they let it go and they realize they made a mistake.
Yeah. What is going to be the next market trigger? And I don't know, maybe it's already happening, but I'm thinking, what's going to be the next market trigger for that next leg in gold? Is it GDXJ or is it them breaking a certain level, that, you know, breaking the downtrend against gold? Is it silver breaking 26? I mean, I know this is kind of a big picture theoretical question, and there's not necessarily a right answer, but is there anything you're looking for in the precious metals market where something happens and you say, that's it, like, now we're really going to start moving now?
All of those things you just mentioned, I would throw in seeing somebody that's been a, you know, big cap benchmark behemoth leader for forever, like Newmont, actually bottom and make some kind of run here. That would be a big tell. I think all the stuff we just talked about in the ratios of the mining shares against gold, against each other, against the stock market, against Infotech, the whole nine yards plays in. Silver above 2650 plays in. But I really think, Jordan, it's like, what will be, I think we just got it. I think MoneyFest 2024 last week was it. And I think we are here on the launching pad. The countdown has begun and we're ready for liftoff. And that would include everything. And that's what I think you're seeing, the rumblings of that literally today in the mining shares. And I think that's really important to me because they haven't participated. If you want to pick one thing, it's probably the SIL. You'll see the SIL making moves and starting to bottom and create some kind of pattern here. That would be really encouraging among all things.
Yeah, so I know you mentioned it several times already. Yeah, tell me more about the miners, the juniors, what you're thinking, you know, a little bit. Maybe you can tease your report a little bit. Why is it important to focus on them right now?
Just because of everything we've been saying, because of MoneyFest, because of the dollar, because of the debt and deficits. I mean, you have reached the tipping point on so many of these things, man. I mean, you're talking about a government that is handing out money at $4 trillion an annual pace every single month, where it's higher than ever as a percentage of disposable income. You know, it's rising more. You see in the budget, you know, interest costs up. Income protection, $90 billion last month. And it's like, these are kind of like, you know, handouts relative to the border crisis and all this kind of thing. All right. What was down? What was down by $1 billion is one of the smaller things they spend on in February, just weeks ago, is Homeland Security. So you have this whole thing around the border crisis too. I think it's all coming to a head. And I know that we've talked about this, you know, off air sometimes. You also have the science going on. Polarization, which is a function of where the solar system is in the Milky Way. We're in a highly energized place with a lot of activity, a lot of stars, you got a supernova, you got a pulsar, a quasar, you got everything going on in this space that we're in right now. And the context of that shining light on the planet, you kind of talk, well, it's a period of enlightenment. And we're seeing that in things like P. Diddy and all these stories that we have. This, you know, enlightenment includes all of that. But it's also in the context of science where it's polarizing everything. And you see it in politics more than ever. You see it in the weather. You see it in natural disasters, events, and all these kinds of things. You see it in human behavior, you know, more violent and yet more charity at the same time. So everything's polarized. And in that context too, that to me is also makes this a time when we can expect unexpected and unprecedented things. Take cocoa, for example, Jordan. I mean, it's $1,000 a ton now. I mean, $10,000 a ton almost. I mean, this thing was never above, you know, 3,000, 3,300 ever. And it's tripled. Why? Because the weather in Ghana, currencies in Ghana, all these situations are all coming to a head where you're going to see more and more of these things. The inflation dynamic is another major factor in this, because as the Fed is going to be acquiescing, inflation is about to turn up. The February numbers just released a week or two ago showed us two things. Number one, the things that are in the deepest disinflation or even deflation, something like non-durables, ex-medical care, for example, is -1.1 year over year. You have a lot of things that are 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 year over year. They posted gains of 1%, 1.5. One of them posted a gain of 2% for the month. So the things that have disinflated all of a sudden have turned, all right? Energy, the base effect was easy to, you could handicap inflation pretty well, frankly, the last 24 months. And it gets a little trickier from here, but you've seen food come down and now starting to rise. Even in the Fed, one of the Fed regional surveys, they were talking, the food industry was talking about chicken and beef prices rising again and how this is causing problems, you know, with margins and restaurants are closing and, you know, talk about the economy. All of this is crystallizing right now. And that's the big picture. So when you say what will be the catalyst, it's all of it. And it's happening right now, literally. I mean, you know me, I don't like to be dramatic and I don't try and put stuff out there that is outrageous just to put it out there. But I think you saw a really major day today in the mining shares that is very telling as to having reached the point where this thing is about to pop off.
Greg, so much more we could cover, but we got to leave it there for today. Before I let you go, you know, please tell our listeners about all the work you do. I mean, I know there's so many things that you do, your gold guru, your special report. Tell our audience, you know, where they can go to get a copy, if you're giving out a copy or not, or where they can go to subscribe.
Sure. It's sales at weldononline.com, W-E-L-D-O-N online, all one word, weldononline.com. And, you know, last time we did an interview, we got some pretty good response from your people. There are a bunch of really great people out there that are linked to you, Jordan. So I give you, you know, kudos for doing such a great job of building your own business here. You got a real loyal following. They love you. So that's great. I'll be happy to send the report I'm preparing right now with all these ratio spreads, all of this. No problem. We do the Gold Guru, which is the gold product that's, you know, really pretty inexpensive, but great value. And we do that with all the mining shares. We rank them quantitatively. I do full technical breakdowns, the whole monetary thing. It includes everything. So we offer that as well. And, you know, I am a CTA. It's a high minimum these days because these moves and some of these things, I mean, the dollar value, the moves, just like in the NASDAQ index or the S&P, they're huge day to day. So, you know, it's a high minimum. We take accredited investors only, but we have been just crushing it because if you want to keep pace with the debasement of the purchasing power of money, wealth, income, you need to do other things than be passively invested in the stock market. It's not going to keep pace. It just isn't. And I say this all the time, but it's true. I mean, stock market in Argentina, new high. Stock market in Pakistan, new high. Stock market in Turkey, new high. But it's not keeping pace with inflation or the currency debasement. And that's what's coming here in the U.S. because the next round of money printing is going to have to be exponentially larger than the last one to have the same percentage effect. And you need a bigger percentage effect given how fast they're creating debt and borrowing from the public. So in that context, you know, it behooves people to maybe trade stuff like the commodities. We could talk about food commodities for an hour too. I mean, you've had this move in cocoa. Coffee looks like it's next. Cotton looks very bullish. Soybeans have had all the bearish news priced in. They're about to go. Copper, low inventories, about to make a big move. I see $6 copper potentially by the end of this year. So I feel like people need to be involved in all these things. You can't do it yourself. There's a lot of great CTAs out there that do that. And I think people that do what I do will rise in value over this time frame because you will offer investors you know, access to markets that I think they're going to need to be in just to keep pace.
Absolutely. Yeah, Greg, fantastic as always. Really appreciate you coming on. Let's do it again the next 3 or 4 months or so. And
I'll be back.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Greg. Just fantastic as always. And we'll talk again soon.
My pleasure, Jordan. You did a great job. So kudos to you again.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.